Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here. One of the most important things you can do is support Mark Kelly. If Mark Kelly is elected in November 3rd, I think it is, then he goes to office pretty much immediately. He doesn't have to wait until mid-January to assume office, and that could throw the Senate in a better position. Max, I hear that you're organization is endorsing a president for the first time in history, 38 years.
That's correct. The National Committee to Preserve Social Security has been around for 38 years. We are very involved, as I'm sure you know, in congressional races, House and Senate. We have never endorsed in the presidential, but we felt it was incumbent upon us to make this move because of the danger that President Trump's recent actions and cumulative actions on Social Security, Medicare, and other senior-related issues warranted our endorsement. And it's a big step for us, and we're proud to make it at this point.
So you called a meeting of, like, the board of directors of the organization and agreed to support a presidential
candidate. That's correct. I felt it was such a departure from our historical stance on presidential elections that I asked the board to convene, and we had a special board meeting, and they unanimously supported this action.
Tell us a little bit, I don't know about a timeline exactly, but tell us a little bit about a little more systematically about what Donald Trump has been doing to Social Security, because those of us who follow politics are extremely worried about some of the stuff he's done. People who don't even know what's going on.
Yeah, well, he has, over the course of his tenure as president, submitted budgets to the Congress that were very damaging to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Older Americans Act programs, such as Meals on Wheels, and I think about $1 trillion in cuts submitted by the president's in his budgets. Fortunately, the Congress reversed much of that and reinstated the budgets for the programs and even added a little money in some cases. But what is really gotten us to this tipping point is about, I guess, 6-8 weeks ago, the president started talking about he wanted to defer the payroll tax. And, you know, you never know with this president if how much of it is real or how much of it is just rhetoric. But sure enough, about 4 weeks ago, he issued an executive order that deferred the payroll tax on employees for the rest of this year for 4 months. And then next year, the first 4 months of next year, supposedly two things might happen. Either those employees would have to pay that back, in which case they'd have to pay double the amount.
And be very pissed off.
Probably would have spent that money by then. or this really, really struck me. I watched the president, I think he was getting on a helicopter at the White House. He said, if I'm reelected, I'm going to just eliminate the payroll tax altogether, not just defer it for 4 months. And a reporter asked him, how is this going to affect Social Security? And, of course, in his usual manner, he said, well, this won't have anything to do with Social Security because we're going to fill in that gap out of general revenues. And I thought, really? You have put out a tax bill, passed a tax bill that added a couple trillion dollars to the federal debt. We have added trillions more to deal with this pandemic, which was necessary. And you think the Congress is going to come back and add trillions more to make up for the lost revenue? I find I'm very dubious about that. And I believe he either does not understand how Social Security is funded, which is a payroll tax, a dedicated revenue stream, does not get money from other sources, or he doesn't care, or both.
I would say both, Max.
This would mean, I believe, over time, in a short time, the Social Security program would be depleted of its resources. The chief actuary of the Social Security program has commented on this, and his comment was, if the payroll tax is eliminated, Social Security will run out of money to pay benefits in a couple of years. That is disaster. And I just recall Newt Gingrich, when he was Speaker, talked about a plan to have Medicare wither on the vine. That's what this is all about. And in my opinion, I've been asked, well, why is the president doing this? He is trading Social Security for votes. That's what this is all about. And he believes if people, workers, have more money in their pockets, they're going to be so delighted by that that they'll vote for him. That is a very dangerous process that he has begun.
I think that's a very simple but very accurate analysis, Max, that he's willing to sacrifice Social Security or anything. I don't know whether he understands how it's funded or not. I don't think he would even care to figure that out. You probably got 2 minutes to explain to him, if you want to, in the White House, how it's funded. But I think, yeah, he's willing to trade anything. What he's doing, folks, is he's deferring the payroll tax, and that'll give people more money. But in the trade-off is it's cutting the money that's going to Social Security, maybe permanently, maybe just short time. But he also wants that if you try to recapture the money that he's not collected, then the amount of money taken out of paychecks will go up, and he thinks that'll be very unpopular, and maybe he can, Max, get rid of Social Security? Or he's always promising something. He promised to...
You know what if this actually happens, and I hope to God it doesn't, but if it actually happens, the Congress is going to be confronted with a problem. What are we going to do? Because there is not enough money in the program to pay full benefits. We can't add trillions of dollars out of general revenues. To do that, we'd have to raise taxes or add to the federal debt. So we better start thinking about cutting benefits. And that's where this is all headed. And, you know, the Social Security benefits are modest. People aren't living high on the hog because they have Social Security. I think the average benefit is about a little over $1,400 a month. We cannot afford to see cuts to these programs for seniors. And by the way, Social Security is a program for families. Yes, it's for retirees, but a third of Social Security benefits go to non-retired workers, survivors, spouses, children, disabled. That all is at risk by the president's latest initiative.
I don't know whether Trump said it, but I remember reading or hearing somewhere that the Republican Party just as soon get rid of Social Security altogether, and that, you know, this suspension or cancellation of the payroll tax will inevitably lead there, and that's really what they're after.
Well, Max, were you able to hear that?
I'm not sure. I think I did.
Okay, good.
Just so I'm certain.
Sure. To put it briefly, I think the Republicans want to get rid of Social Security, and by suspending or even canceling the withholding of Social Security tax, it just dies, and that's the ultimate goal.
Well, the Republican Party opposed Social Security from its inception, almost across the board. Not all Republicans, but for the most part. And they've been trying their darndest to cut back on the program for years. And I've been asked, why do you think this is their cause? Why are they opposed to the program? And I think it's a philosophy of government. You know, the Republican Party, for the most part, favors smaller government, less government spending, and you know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I remember when President Clinton was about to leave office at the end of his second term, when, by the way, we were looking at a surplus in our federal budget, and people wondered, well, how are we going to deal with the surplus? But I remember he made a speech that really captured my attention, and he said, we're turning from 1999 into the year 2000, and he talked about building a bridge to the 21st century. The Republican approach to Social Security, the way I see it, is an effort to build a bridge to the 19th century. And at the other side of that bridge, there's a sign that says, you're on your own, and good luck. I'm not even sure about the good luck part, but you're on your own for your retirement security, for your health care, and you need to take care of yourself. I don't think the American people would accept that. Social Security has overwhelming support. All the polls I've ever seen show that overwhelming support among Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, over 80%, in some cases 90%, support the program and support improving the program, expanding the benefits, improving the cost of living adjustment, raising the minimum benefit a little bit so that people are able to get by a little better in life. So, you know, I think it's a philosophy of government that is, we saw it in the effort by President George W. Bush to privatize the program. That collapsed. And even this latest effort, I think Republicans, many of them, are skeptical, at least nervous, about cutting or eliminating the payroll tax. I know the chairman of the Finance Committee, when this issue surfaced, Senator Grassley of Iowa, he's very concerned. If for nothing else, the perception that the public will feel Republicans want to cut the program, and that's pretty important as we are going to have an election in 6 weeks.
I hear you about all of this, and as we've talked to you almost every year for the last 5 years or so about Social Security, a Democratic Perspective sort of promised people when we started in 2011 that we would keep a focus on Social Security and retirement issues for older as well as for younger citizens. I listen to all this, and I wonder, there's so much in northern Arizona, there's so much hatred of the government, anti-government feeling, that it overrides the obviously good things that the government's doing, like Social Security. Social Security is a solid program. I don't know what people would do without it, and yet they're voting for candidates that would undercut the program. I think part of it is they don't understand what Social Security is. They've been told it's an entitlement. They think it's some sort of voluntary thing. They don't understand their own contribution to it. I think the lack of clarity about Social Security helps to amplify this sort of overriding any government feeling. Is there anything we can do about it?
Well, you know, you're so correct about that. I have found, I've talked to so many people, I participated in town hall meetings, hundreds of them with members of Congress, with some of the delegation in Arizona, and a lot of people, when they don't really understand, as you said, that the payroll tax funds the Social Security program. That's how the revenue is received to make benefits. Many people don't even, they don't make that connection. That's why we're doing whatever we can and why I appreciate being on your program. Hopefully people will understand the direct link between the Social Security payroll tax and the program. You know, a more, I think a better way to explain it is this payroll tax, what it really is paying an insurance, you're buying an insurance premium. You're paying an insurance premium when you have these deductions made out of your paycheck as a worker. And remember what the term FICA, a lot of people know that term, but not all that many understand that what it stands for. It stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act. That's what FICA stands for. It funds old age survivor and disability programs. And you mentioned the term entitlement. It's not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit. It's not something you get because you're living and breathing. It's something that you pay into all your working life. And one of the points that I try to make when I talk to groups around the country is addressed towards younger people. They're the ones that are most skeptical about the program, think they're more likely to see a UFO than to ever get a Social Security check. And that's wrong. But what the president is proposing is going to fuel that myth that the program is going to disappear and it won't be there for younger people when they retire. As I mentioned, right now, forget about what happens when you retire. A third of the benefits go to spouses, survivors, disabled, children who have a parent who died young or became disabled, get help from the Social Security program. One figure I think is important as an example. If you are a 27-year-old worker with a spouse and two children, you have right now, never mind what happens when you reach retirement age, you have right now about $500,000 in value to life and disability insurance because of Social Security. A lot of younger people aren't even aware of that, and I try to stress that because they need to support this program. It protects their families.
I know it's such an obvious point. We're talking with Max Richmond, who's president and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. It's been around for decades, and its job is preserving and protecting Social Security and Medicare. I can't tell you how important I think that is, folks. Max, how about this? Klaus, do you have a question for Max?
I can't
hear the question. Maybe you can repeat it.
Like Steve said, it's incomprehensible that people who rely on Social Security would still vote for Trump. And the other observation I make is that the Republican Party really is totally non-empathetic. They don't care about poor people and whether they live or starve, get sick or die. All the real focus, in spite of all the propaganda, is to the wealthy.
Yeah, that's, I couldn't agree more. I was thinking the other day about the president's, when he campaigned in 2016, there were 17 Republicans running for the nomination. I watched most of those primary debates in 2016. And the president said over and over again, I won't touch Social Security, I won't touch Medicare. He's not just touching the Social Security program by his latest executive order to defer the payroll tax. He is strangling it. It won't exist. If he's successful, if he's reelected, and he's able to eliminate the payroll tax. And I wondered, why, how do people support someone who has taken that position. And I don't know if this is right or not, but I know a lot of folks back in 2016 thought having a businessman run the government as president was a pretty good idea. That bringing the idea of a businessman into the government, people I think thought of efficiency, productivity, elimination of waste. I don't think what they realized is this president, yes, he was a businessman. He filed bankruptcy, I think, 6 times while he was in business. Each of those times, who was left holding the bag? Workers. You remember in 2016, we heard from all those plumbers and electricians and painters who never got paid when his casinos went bankrupt. They were not paid. In this case, I see this Social Security payroll tax issue as a way to bankrupt the Social Security program. And who's going to be left holding the bag? Who won't be receiving the benefits they depend on now or will depend on in the future? It's retirees and workers.
I believe that people did vote for him, Max, thinking that he would protect Social Security and Medicare and all of that in a way that they didn't really hear that as strongly from other Republican candidates. I think people believed him. I think people believed in his astonishing economic success, and then we find out that his dad gave him $45 million to start off, and he left in New York just bankruptcies, but also unpaid bills. And he's a man who's used, I don't know, what does he have, 1,000 lawyers or some sort of preposterous number? And it's thousands and thousands of lawsuits. And so when he cheats you, then he ties you up in a lawsuit. So you want to get your $5,000 for your plumbing, and he's got his million-dollar lawyers keeping you from getting anything. I mean, it's a pattern. The man is really a charlatan. I'm sorry. He's a charlatan and a fraud. And, I mean, there are honest billionaires. I mean, Mike Bloomberg made $1 billion because he came up with a lot of innovative stuff, you know, and so did the Jobs at Apple. Innovated, created jobs, created things. Trump has created stuff for Trump and his family, and that seems to be his whole world. He doesn't seem to be able to see beyond it. It's all about, is it in my interest or not? So you have a president, though, who at least pretends to destroy Social Security in order to, I don't know, get elected. He seems to be pretty much willing to do anything in the last few months to get elected, and I think we'll see more of it. Anyway, let's get back to Social Security. Max,
let me make a comment. I think it obviously behooves, after listening to Max, it behooves us as Democrats in our campaigns to try to explain to people that they're really playing with their livelihoods when they're voting for Trump. And the reality is that they may not get any Social Security checks anymore to vote for Trump. And that's not something that we've talked about. We've talked about health care and, you know, mostly health care. I think we need to emphasize that.
Max, how can we go in the opposite direction of what Trump is doing? How can we improve Social Security? Because I know when Mike and I talk to you, we always want to have more Social Security income for people because pensions are either non-existent or collapsing and people's savings are tough. I mean, one big medical bill and your savings are gone. So what's the positive direction?
Originally, the Social Security was described back in the 30s when it was created as one leg of a three-legged stool, as you pointed out. Social Security defined benefit pensions and savings. Those other two legs are pretty wobbly. In many cases, non-existent. We're seeing pensions, defined benefit pensions, largely disappear, and savings are pretty meager. So that last leg of Social Security needs to be strengthened. not undermined, not weakened. And you asked what can be done. It's a good question. If nothing happens, there's no change in the way it's funded. The trustees tell us of Social Security, the program it will, in 2035, will only be able to pay 80% of the benefits that people are counting on. That would be tragic. So we need to fix it. We don't fix it by cutting the funding even further. Well, already that 2035 date has been moved up, largely because there's so much unemployment. People aren't working. They're not going to pay payroll taxes. And by the way, it reminds me, this scheme is not going to help anybody who's unemployed. They don't care if their payroll taxes are deferred because they're not getting paid in the first place. And a lot of companies, federal government has to do this. The military has to do this. A lot of companies, our organization, it's voluntary. We're not going to go ahead and not collect the payroll taxes as many large companies. And I think the Chamber of Commerce is even opposed to this. For many, many reasons. It's very confusing, but the real answer, to go back to your question, what do? We improve the program. We pass legislation, it's H.R. 860 in the House of Representatives. It's called the Social Security 2100 Act, and it would bring more revenue into the program to make the program solvent, not just till 2035, but for the rest of the century, and improve the minimum benefit, not a lot, but about $70 a month, which is a lot if you're living entirely or mostly on Social Security, have a more accurate and generous cost of living adjustment, a COLA, and it does this by making changes to the payroll tax, not cutting it, but making changes as follows. Right now, there's a cap, a limit on the taxes on wages. It's $137,700. The legislation, and there's a companion in the Senate as well, would keep the cap at what it is, but start collecting payroll tax again at $400,000 and above in wages. And that brings in enough revenue to put the program on solid footing for the rest of the century, and make the improvements that I just outlined.
Why don't you go over that again, Max? Because the solution to the problems of Social Security, aside from Trump going in the wrong direction and trying to undercut it or whatever he's doing, what's the solution? The solution is actually fairly simple because there's a cap on income.
Right.
And what you're talking about is undoing this cap of income on very high incomes, am I right?
Exactly. I mean, there are proposals that would eliminate the cap altogether. Politically, that would be difficult to get through. There are places in the country where making $140,000 or $150,000 a year does not make you wealthy in New York, in Washington,
no.
in large cities. So that would be getting rid of it altogether. Politically would be a problem, but starting keeping that gap as it is and starting to collect payroll taxes at $400,000, you know, a lot of people don't even know there's a cap. I have met so many people, and they don't realize there's a cap on wages subject to the payroll tax, so they've never even gotten close to that. They assume, many people assume, you pay tax on your on all your wages. I talked to a group. I named a very good basketball player. I won't name him again because I got a lot of blowback when I mentioned his name. But he's very good. He makes a lot of money. He makes so much money that he reaches that cap, $137,700 a year. He reaches that cap halfway through the first quarter of the first game of the basketball season.
Yeah, Max, we've talked
that
to
quarter,
you.
The game, the season, the playoffs, the championship, no more payroll tax. And I bet that basketball player would be okay with at least paying payroll tax for the whole quarter.
Let's hope when we talk to you next year, because we seem to talk to you yearly, stay in your position as CEO and president of the committee. We'll talk to you again next year, hopefully in a much more optimistic and really good situation. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate you calling into the show and your announcement that you're supporting Joe Biden for president, the first presidential nomination by the committee to preserve Social Security and Medicare in 38 years. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
That was very instructive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we had a short break while contact.
Well, we have a break, and we're going to be talking to Kathy Rutherford. Kathy Rutherford is a kind of a genius organizer of the local Democratic Party, and we appreciate her coming on. Max had to leave. He has some meetings and stuff. So we're going to have Kathy on, and we'll be talking about local issues, and what I want to talk to her about. Are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, Kathy Rutherford, you're there. Great. I'm glad you called in. I've been wanting to talk to local folks. So you strike me as like the best organizer we've ever had for Democrats in Sedona. How are you guys dealing with the fact that that you can't do, going door to door, and you can't do the canvassing that was the core of your work? How are you dealing with COVID? How does that impact activists?
Well, yes, so we've definitely had to change our game plan because of that. But I have to say first, Steve, that it's not just me. We have a whole network here in the Verde Valley, the Sedona Action Network, and it includes Democrats of the Red Rocks and indivisible groups in the area, Friends of the Verde River, the Northern Arizona Climate Change Alliance. A lot of people get together every month to talk and figure out what we need to do. And so I'm supported with everything that I do by tons of people and a lot of volunteer recruitment through all those groups. So, yeah, we're not going door to door. We have decided that for the safety of the volunteers and for the safety of our residents, that we're not going to do that. It doesn't make sense. And so we've switched a lot of our program over to digital. We actually hired this fabulous digital intern who is at Prescott College. And so if you haven't been on our Facebook page lately, you should go there. We have great posts that Madison is her name that helps she helps with those, and we have had all the candidates on there with excellent videos to try to get the word out about our Democratic candidates. And then she actually connects with Marianne, who is our web mistress, and the same things go out over email. And, of course, we're making tons of phone calls. So that is the key one-to-one voter contact that we're doing now, which is so critically important, and we're doing it for candidates up and down the ballot.
I noticed that you're sometimes what you're doing is you're actually doing something that I never did when I was in DOOR on the board. You're calling voters who've sort of dropped out of voting and calling to see what's up with them, whether they've moved or whether they know their registration has lapsed. Is this part of a program?
Yeah, we're working really closely with Legislative District 6. So Felicia French, of course, is running for the State Senate, and Coral Evans is running for the State House. And they have a great organizer that actually lives here in Sedona. Her name is Natalie. And she came over from Sister District. A Sister District is a project in California that supported Felicia French's campaign in 2018. And it was actually Natalie's idea, I have to say that, to call the inactive voters. So there are people that are moved off of the voter roll because they've moved or they haven't voted in the last two presidential elections. And so we're giving them calls and letting them know, you know, you can vote in this election because, of course, we need every single vote. You know, I listened to the earlier part of the radio show with Max, and I truly believe that the way we are going to flip Arizona blue this year is to make sure that we get every single person that will vote for our Democratic candidates to vote. And so these calls that have been made to inactive voters, I know one call was made to a student who was living abroad and didn't even realize that he could actually vote in this election, which you can vote in this election if you contact your county recorder and get it set up. My daughter actually lives in Bali, and she votes in every single election. So that's just one little piece of what's been done. We have been calling people since February, and we have a ton of people that we know that are going to vote for our candidates. But the key thing that is coming up here in just 2 weeks, because the ballots are mailed on October 7th. So that's a really important date for everybody to put on their calendar. Probably get them on the 9th. Who knows about the mail these days because of the other, you know, trickery that that guy that lives in the White House has done with our postal service. But they'll get it about the 9th probably. And so we need to start making calls to every single one of those voters and help them make a plan to get those ballots in.
When I talk to voters who haven't voted much, Kathy, I think the one thing I think that they need to understand is they need to vote down ticket. They need not just to vote for Joe Biden, but they need to vote for, you know, for Inch and for all these other. I guess I'd say the list, the Democratic list, is as good as it's ever been or better. And it's important to vote down tickets, important to vote on the two propositions. Don't just stop. I think there's a study that showed that Democrats tend to stop voting before they get down ticket. So that's something you guys are emphasizing or?
Yeah, we're totally emphasizing that. If you go on our website, there's a ton of information up there about voting. We have a candidate page, which has all the candidates up and down the ballot. We've been making a ton of phone calls for Legislative District 6. We just started making phone calls for our county supervisors. I don't think people realize how important or how impactful the decisions are that the county recorders make about, not county recorders, sorry, county supervisors, about our lives here in the Verde Valley. For instance, they get to decide whether zoning variances are granted for large developments. And there was one that was up recently called Spring Creek between Sedona and Cottonwood, 6,000 homes this person wanted to put in there. So our county supervisors, Donna Michaels, is running for District 3, which most of us live in District 3, includes Cottonwood, Sedona, Jerome, Clarkdale. And she is running. She is going to get elected, and she is going to be the first Democrat on the Yavapai County Board of Supervisors. The other thing that they have done is they made decisions about whether people should wear masks or not. And they had a vote on it early in the pandemic, and they decided that they didn't need to mandate masks in Verde Valley. So that means unincorporated places like Cottonwood, or not like Cottonwood, sorry, like Village of Oak Creek, they're not mandated there. Then they left it to the mayors to make decisions about that. So they impact our lives every single day. And then the other, we're sending out a mailing on all this for LD6, the county supervisors, and also the Corporation Commission. I think a lot of people don't know what they do, which is, you know, they are responsible for deciding whether there are rate hikes in our utility bills or not. So that's what we're doing. We're really emphasizing those down ballot races that people don't know so much about.
I think great.
Go ahead.
I think that's great, Kathy. Tell us a little bit more about the Corporation Commission and its importance. Every election, a Democratic perspective, tries to explain to people how important this boring-sounding commission is. And we have three great Democratic candidates running, right?
Yeah, and we have Bill Mundell, Jay Stanfield, and you caught me with the third one, Steve.
Now we're all getting older.
Anna Tovar, right? And they're calling themselves the Solar Team. So one of the things that the Corporation Commission has done in the past, it has been basically eroded over the years because it has been very Republican heavy for a while, is they did get some laws passed to encourage solar power in Arizona. It is just a farce to me that we live in a state where I don't even know how many days, like 364 or something, days of sun that we have here, and we do not have a good solar plan. And that's why they're calling themselves the solar team. That is one of the things that they like to do when they get on, that they will do when they get on the Corporation Commission, is to push the utilities, create laws that will require the utilities use more renewable energy.
We used to, I don't know if you call it kiddie, but we used to invite APS to come on the show and deny that they gave secretly billions of bucks to Corporation Commission candidates that would do what they want once they got on the commission. They never showed up because I don't think they want to. They want to stick to non-denial. So what all I'd say is, to underline Kathy's point, Corporation Commission is important. It can lead to a more sustainable future in terms of energy production, right? Right, Kathy? I mean, we have a lot of potential here.
Oh, totally, totally. And it has been ignored because of the decisions that have been made. I don't know. Bill Mundell was on the Corporation Commission earlier, I don't know what years, and he was responsible for getting a solar bill passed. But like I said, that's been eroded since then. And it is because it costs money to build facilities for solar power, which eventually is returned to the power companies, but they don't want to make that upfront investment. And of course, all of us realize from this summer that climate change, climate science shows us that the Earth is warming up. I mean, this has been the hottest summer since I've lived here, since 2009. We need solar power. We need to stop polluting our environment so we have an environment that's healthy and good for us and our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren.
We've got 2 minutes left. Kathy, tell people how they can contact Democrats of the Red Rocks or these other groups.
Okay. I think the best way, we have a volunteer page up on the Democrats of the Red Rocks, so it's a really easy address. You can always Google it, of course, but it's democratsoftheredrocks.org. We have all the information up there about the candidates, so if you want more information, there are videos and website links, so be sure to go on there. If you need information about voting, we are the informed voters. The ones that listen to this program are the informed voters. We need to know what to tell our neighbors and our friends and our families about how to vote. There's going to be a new drop box in VOC. As yet, we don't have the exact location. That will be up there. Everything about voting. So that's really the best location to go, is to our website. And, of course, our phone number is up there. Our phone, we have it forwarded to a volunteer. So if you have questions, please call, because that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that everybody is informed. And the last thing, we do need volunteers. But I want to say is that please, every single voter, call three friends, family, acquaintances, and make sure they vote. We have to get every single vote. Felicia French was 577 votes away from winning in 2018. There were 580 people who did not vote who said they would vote for her. So every single vote counts. It's so critical that we get everybody that we know out and vote. And it'll start October 7th. Early voting starts October 7th.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. Thanks for taking that time from all your work and giving us a call and giving us an update. I'd like to talk to you again sometime later in the election. We've got to wrap it up. The League of Women Voters is holding some important meetings. Check their website. Thank you very much, folks. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.